Well, as I almost let out of the bag, I want to talk about a business owner. And I want to paint a scenario as I begin today. So this business owner had a vision of a successful business, a business that he wanted to open up and run. And he wanted to have that business going forward and see it rise and turn to success. In the process of time, this business owner chose a manager to run the business. He was not running the business himself. He owned the business and he was going to reap in the profits of the business, but he was not going to have the everyday control of the business in every respect. So he had this business manager, and he wanted him to run it for him. Well, the business manager that he chose had his own ideas about how the business should be run. And he wasn't fully straightforward and out there with the business owner. He had methods that he sat into practice, but after a course of time, the business began to weaken. And before long, the business was headed into bankruptcy. Well, and so the business owner decided to investigate a little bit. And he found out in the course of time that the manager that he had, in actual fact, had a competing business on the side. And it was that manager's intent to get rid of his competition by running his business into the ground. And so he instituted some very particular practices that he knew would cause the owner's business to fail. But the business owner decided, you know, I have this son. He's very capable. And he knows in his heart what it is that I want and the way I want my business to run. And so I'm going to let him manage the business. And so he set about to do that. The new manager had fresh ideas. He was very creative. And he knew that he had a better way because he and his dad had discussed what they wanted. And so they developed a very, very detailed business plan on how to operate this new business. And they set about to establish the new practices of business. They fired the old manager, got rid of him, and took that detailed business plan and started making renovations. They renovated all of the storefront and the product line, things that they knew would succeed. And so then they set about on opening day for the new business. But they thought, we've got to let the customers know. And so they made up a sign. They made up a sign and hung it out in front of the store, and it said, open, under new management. Well, it was very thinly veiled, wasn't it? You know, of what I'm talking about here. God the Father, of course, is the business owner. Satan the devil was the original manager of the business. And of course, Jesus Christ is the new manager to come. On the Feast of Trumpets, which we are observing today, it's all about how God the Father and Jesus Christ are about to open up this world and this society of men under new management. And today I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about it in a specific way. I want to talk about it in relation to the management style of the old business owner and the management style of the new business owner. How Satan does business and how Jesus Christ will do business. And that day is coming, brethren, when the store is going to open. And this day pictures that day when Jesus Christ returns to establish the new management on earth. Because Jesus Christ is going to return as Lord of Lords and King of Kings. Now, the discussion of new management styles when it comes to discussion of kings and rulers, very apropos for today's recent events of the day with the transition from Elizabeth II on her death to Charles III, who will be the new king of England. In actual fact, Charles III, as was Elizabeth II, are the stewards of the throne of Israel. We are part of God's people. Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter, and verse 6, make that pretty plain. It says of Israel, "For you are a holy people to the Lord your God." I'm talking to you, Israel. You bunch of sniveling, stiff-necked, backbiting, you know, troublesome children. Says, you're troublesome children, but you're my children. You know, and I love you. You are a holy people, or at least you will be by the time I get done disciplining you. To the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you. We are a chosen people. To be a people for himself. A special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. We're not any better than any of the other people on earth. And it doesn't mean that God doesn't love everyone who ever has lived or ever will live. He loves them dearly, and he has a place in his plan for all of them, but this is the start. This is opening day of the new business that we're talking about here. And Charles III is now king of that group of people. He is a descendant of David through Solomon. His lineage, if you look at the family chart, the family tree of the royal family of England, it is existing. I have a copy of it. It goes all the way back. Mine has Elizabeth II, all the way back to King David through Solomon. Well, guess what? Jesus Christ will be taking his place. Jesus Christ, he is a steward. He is not of the the rightful lineage. He is a steward, a caretaker, a shopkeeper, if you will. And he will be giving up that job as shopkeeper, head shopkeeper, to that one who is. And you can look into Luke, the first chapter. I'm not going to go there. But you can look at the lineage of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, God told David, you will never cease to have someone of your descendants to sit on the throne of Israel. It will never happen. He told Solomon the same thing. And until Charles III, that line of Solomon's descendants have always been on the throne of Israel. But Solomon wasn't faithful. It says that in the end, if you look in Chronicles, that Solomon didn't do so well. If you look at the lineage of Jesus Christ in Luke, the first chapter, you run that back, and the lineage of Jesus Christ goes back to David through his son Nathan. And so the time will come when the stewardship of the house of Israel will change. Well, in fact, that's exactly what Gabriel told Mary. He said in Luke, the first chapter, he told her the pertinent things. It's Luke, the first chapter, and verse 31. This is Gabriel speaking to Mary, and behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. That's very reflective of one of the scriptures in Isaiah. Of the increase of his government, there shall be no end. And so we see that it's talking about one and the same. I went through the scripture this morning during the offertory when I referenced Psalms 50 and verse 12, where it says, you know, if I needed something to eat, I wouldn't be coming to your table because I'd go out and get a bull off the hillside or something, and I'd roast it and cook it and eat it, and I don't need anything from you. But what we're talking about in the kings of Israel are stewards that haven't always been faithful and are not faithful because they're under the sway of the overall ruler that's trying to destroy God's business, Satan himself. And yet we're going to see a steward come onto the scene who is faithful. Matthew, the 24th chapter. How can we get through this day without at least touching bases in Matthew, the 24th chapter? Matthew 24, but a little bit atypical place to go to. I want to start in verse 42. Matthew 24, verse 42. And as Mr. Evans said this morning, he said, you know, watch. It's part of our job. Watch. For you do not know what hour the business owner is going to come. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, and this is setting the scene for what's coming later. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. Then it says in verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant, steward, if you will, whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find that manager doing his job in the right way. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him a ruler of all of his goods if he's doing the right thing. But if that evil servant says in his heart, he's out there somewhere. I can get away with stuff. My master is delaying his coming and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him and at an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The day of reckoning for the old manager is coming. And you know that I've used many times Isaiah, the 14th chapter and verse 14. I'm going there again. Isaiah 14:14. Because this is the scenario where Satan basically rebels, decides to disrupt God's business. And he does that in Revelation 14:14, where he says, I will ascend above the heights of the cloud, and I will be like the Most High. Now, that word like is from the Hebrew word dema. The Hebrew word dema, Hebrew 18:19. And it means, I'm going to be comparable to God. I'm going to be comparable. And so he's actually an enemy of God, but he proclaims himself to be comparable to God. I'm just like God. What he is, that's what I am. What vanity he had, but that's what he thinks. Back up to verse 12. In verse 12, God says of him, how you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground. And what? What did his business practices result in? You who weakened the nations. You have had this beautiful thing, and you set about to destroy it out of his vanity. And we know, brethren, that Satan's realm is a spiritual realm. It's a spiritual realm. It's a heavenly, or a realm in the heavens. Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 12 goes into that. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age. This is Satan's business. This is Satan's competing business here with God. Against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. And so we see that Satan's business is a heaven, or is a spiritual business. I don't want to say heavenly. I want to say spiritual business, and not about men. Mankind consists of God's children, and Satan seeks to destroy that worldly business of God and superimpose his business in preeminence over it. Turn to 1 Peter, the 5th chapter. In 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, in verse 8, a very famous scripture, but I want to make a particular point here. 1 Peter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant. You've heard this 10,000 times if you've been in the church of God for any length of time. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking who he may devour. I want to focus on that word, devour. Seeking who he may devour. That's the Greek word, katapino. It's Strong's number G2666, 2666. It's what Satan wants to do to us. And it means destroy or swallow up. Satan's motive is to destroy and swallow up God's creation. And by doing that, destroy God's plan for salvation. Now, Satan has authority. He truly does. And it is God-given authority. He was set as steward over God's business on this earth, over God's business. Let's turn to Luke, the 4th chapter. In Luke, the 4th chapter, which is Satan's attempt to cause Jesus Christ to sin, to egg him on, as it were. You know, if you are the Christ, Jesus Christ couldn't even respond to that, because had he responded in any way to Satan, Satan would have said, I made him do it. So if I made him do it, then I'm control over him. And that means if I made him do it, I'm stronger than he is. So Jesus Christ, if you'll notice, never even responded to any one of the three temptations that Satan threw at him. Verse 5, then the devil, taking him up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world. There they are. There they are out there. All the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. Just there. There it is. You've got that vision of every one of them. And the devil said to him, all this authority I will give to you. You'll have control over it. And their glory. You'll be big cheese on the mountain then. For this has been delivered to me. It was given to me to have that authority. And I give it to whomever I want, and I'll give it to you. You only have to do one thing. Respond to me. You know, let me make you do something. He says, therefore, if you will worship before me, I'll give it all to you. And of course, Jesus Christ didn't respond to that either. Rather, he responded with a command. Get out of here. You're an offense. Get out of here. But we know from Revelation, the 12th chapter, and we will go there next. Back in the day when I first came into the church, I called this Revelations, until somebody pointed out to me very wisely at one point in time, this is one single revelation. It is a revelation. Revelation, the 12th chapter. I sit there talking instead of turning. Revelation 12, verse 3. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon having 7 tails and 10 horns and 7 diadems, a type of crown, on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And verse continuing, and the dragon stood before the woman, and we can stop there because that's the point that I want to make. He took 1/3 of the angels. I don't know that it says those are the only ones under his control, but those are the ones that went with him. 1/3 of them. And Jude says something about that 1/3. In Jude, only one chapter, but in verse 6, it talks about those angels. Jude, first chapter, one chapter, only chapter, and verse 6, and the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Pardon me. And Ezekiel, going further in the parallel chapter to Isaiah, the 14th chapter, Ezekiel 28. In verse 14, it says, you were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect. You were perfect. And it says, it says there, in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you, by the abundance of your shop trading, your business practices, you became filled with violence within and you sinned. Therefore, I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. God made him what he was, put him where he put him. He had the authority that he had, and he could give it away if he wanted to, if he got what he wanted out of it to destroy God's kingdom. And he was perfect until he decided that he would self-anoint himself to be king of this world and God of this world. And the results of his practices, filled with violence. That's his practice, his modus operandi, his way of doing things. The business practice of Satan the devil. But let's turn here. Let's look at the business practice of Jesus Christ. Let's go to John, the 8th chapter. John. Jesus Christ talking about Satan and his business practices. John 8 and verse 44. And Jesus Christ is speaking to the Pharisees. And this is not a very comfortable speech, I don't think, that's going on. Because he's saying to the Pharisees in verse 44, you are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. You want to be just like daddy. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar. He is a liar and the father of it. It says, God is love. Here it says, Satan is liar. Satan is murderer. Satan is hate. God is love. So we see opposites here. And we see from looking at Revelation chapter 12, verse 12, we won't go there, but it says basically that his days are numbered. He's about to be fired. And he knows that. And he knows he has only a short time left. And it's making him mad. And what he's doing to the other employees is abusing them, just like it said in Matthew's account. And it says the results, 1 John, of Satan's world. And brethren, we don't have to look too far afield to see the results of Satan's world. Think about what's happened in this world in your lifetime alone. Look at what's happened in this world over the past 7 years. What's happened in this world over the past 3 years? I mean, transgenderism was just a phrase 3 years ago. You heard of it, but you didn't pay much attention to it. But Satan's business, Satan's world. Get my fingers to do the walking through the yellow pages as the ad used to go. 1 John 5:19. Can't get 4 and 5 separated here. 1 John 5:19. For we know that we are of God. And you could say, but it says here in the King James, and we know that we're of God. We are the children of God. We are of God. We're not of this world. And the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. That's what he's done. That's what he's achieved. That's what he's accomplished. That's according to his plan. And so this world in Matthew 24 and verse 22 that we've heard mentioned, it's doomed to destruction. And unless that time is shortened, there'll be no flesh saved. No flesh. But for the elect's sake, it's going to be cut short. We also see that at the time of Jesus Christ's return, Revelation 18 and verse 23, the whole world is deceived. Everybody. Everybody. King Charles III moving toward one world governance, the steward of the house of Israel, is disqualifying himself. His mother dedicated her reign, Elizabeth II, at the beginning of her reign to service before her people to God. Charles III is dedicating himself to one world governance, one world rule. It is not even a veiled image of the beast to come. And so that's what the world is facing at the time that Jesus Christ returns. 1 second before total annihilation of mankind. I don't know if it's a second. Maybe a millisecond. It may be a minute. I don't know. No, I don't think it'll be a minute. I think it will be at that exact, I'm speculating. I want to make that clear. Speculating. I think it will be like it was when Abraham had the knife over Isaac's chest and was leaning forward and bearing his weight down. And God knew that Abraham would obey him. I think that it will be the same when Jesus Christ returns, that God will, at that millisecond, that micro moment, be absolutely convinced that mankind is going to die. Kings are authorized. Kings are authorized. Kings don't set themselves up. Satan set himself up. You know, he's the ultimate pat myself on the back guy. I am God, just comparable to the real God. Kings authorized themselves. Herod the Great, for instance. Herod the Great, his father was a very wealthy Idumean. An Idumean was an Esauite who, during Israel history, was forced to convert to Judaism. The Israelites had the upper hand. They went to this group of people and said, we got a proposition for you here. Convert or die. And the Esauites said, ooh, okay, we're Jews. We're Jews. And they converted, but Herod the Great's father became very wealthy, and he cozied up to the Romans, played the political game, became a Roman citizen, and found favor amongst the Romans. And he passed that on to Herod, and Herod did the same thing. In 40 BC, Herod went to Rome, cozied up to them, and he was authorized to be king of Judea, in 40 BC. Well, guess what? There was a problem. There was already a king in Judea in 40 BC. So Rome said, well, I'll tell you what we do. We'll make you the king of Judea. And oh, by the way, here's an army. Take back with you and make it happen. And that's exactly what he did. In a three-year war between 37 and 34 BC, he defeated Antigonus, and then began to reign and rule. Had a new shopkeeper in town, but he had to take it. Now, mortal kings are just surrogates of Satan. These are things that are allowed by God over the course of history, just like Charles III is allowed to be where he is by God. Daniel 4, verse 17 points that out, and it says that sometimes he puts into the place the lowest of men. Well, I have a joke about the lowest of men, but I don't have time to tell it. So remind me sometime and I'll tell you about that. It's about the smartest man in the world. And he jumps out of an airplane without a parachute. Any rate, remind me of that sometime and I'll tell it to you if you haven't already heard it. Well, guess what? The overall authority on earth has been permitted by God to Satan. Satan disqualified himself, and he tested Jesus Christ. And in the course of Jesus Christ's life, Jesus Christ said in John 16:33 that he had overcome Satan. And then in chapter 14 and verse 30, he said that Satan had nothing in him There was nothing for Satan to accuse Jesus Christ of. And so Satan was defeated by Christ, but he was not dethroned by Christ at that point in time. He is still here. He is still ruling, and he is still doing a destructively bad job in his attempts to destroy God's kingdom. The contrasting example, Jesus Christ was authorized, just as Herod was authorized, just as Satan was not authorized. A king has to be authorized. Revelation chapter 4. Revelation chapter 4. And this in Revelation chapter 4 describes the throne room of God. It paints a picture of what God's throne room is, what it's like. We're not going to stay there. We're going to jump immediately into chapter 5. And so what we have here is we have John in a vision in the throne room of God. And in verse 1, and I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals. This is really an important document. They seldom wrote on both sides of a scroll unless it was very, very important. And seven seals. We want to make sure this news doesn't get out anyways too soon. And then I saw a strong angel proclaim with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals?" Who can do this? In verse 3, quiet as it is here now, you could hear a pin drop. And no one in heaven or on the earth or under the, on the earth, in heaven or under the earth. That's up there, down here, and the ones who are already dead, nobody was able to open the scroll or to look at it. And so by this time, John's getting pretty upset. He's being very anguished. And he starts to cry. He said, "Oh no, this can't happen. This can't be. Our hope is gone. There is no one who is worthy to do this." But then the angel said in verse 5, one of the elders said to me, "Oh, John, just cool it. Don't cry. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David," that descendant of David, the Root of David, the starter of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals. Jesus Christ is qualified, and in the course of the next verses, receives the mandate to become the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And in verse 12, it says, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessings." We have a king. What is the nature of Jesus Christ's kingdom? What is the nature of Jesus Christ's business methods? By the way, according to Revelation 19, verses 11 through 16, guess what? Jesus Christ was given an army. just like Herod was, except this is an army. And this is an army of power, headed by a king of power. But what's the king like? What is this King of Kings and Lord of Lords? Psalms 103, verse 7. With the Lord there is mercy. Christ is mercy. God is mercy. Psalms 119, verse 143 says, your law, the law of your land, is truth. In verse 160 of that same chapter, Psalm 119, the entirety of your word, every word you speak, all of it is truth. And the spirit that you have within you is truth. In James, the fourth chapter, in verse 6, it says that he gives grace. He's gracious. And he gives that to the humble. And Jesus Christ's way, opposite from the way of Satan, is the way of service. Jesus Christ is the servant king. Now that was made plain to his disciples in Matthew, the fifth chapter, because Jesus Christ was teaching them here. Did I say fifth? Well, don't go to Matthew 5. Let's go to Matthew 20. That'll work better. Matthew 20 and verse 26. And here we have a controversy. We have a controversy, Matthew 20 and verse 26. It actually starts earlier when the mother of Zebedee in verse 20, she brings her two sons. According to Mark, those two sons were James and John. And they're looking for greatness. They're looking for power. They're looking to be boss, to be in charge, to be the big kahuna. In verse 24, the other disciples are disgruntled. They're saying, "Oh, what's my guys? You know, you think you're going to be greater?" No, we, when in actual fact, they were most likely wanting to be great and greater than James and John. So they had the same idea and same attitude. But in verse 25, Jesus Christ describes his business method. And he says, but Jesus called them to himself and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, boss them around, and those who are great exercise authority. I've got authority, so you do what I say. That's pretty common in this world. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be. Let him do what I did. Come here and serve mankind and die for them and work for them and help them and be kind to them, be merciful, to be humble. And whosoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. That's the guy that's taken over the shop. And it says in Zechariah, the 9th chapter, in verse 9, Zechariah 9:9, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Shout! This is the day of shouting. The day of blaring horns. Of joy and of warning, depending on who you are. O daughter of Jerusalem, behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey. He came that way the next time. He's coming with that power and that authority that he has been given. He's coming with that army that he has been given, and he is going to put the one who claims to be comparable to the Most High God away. That's what this day means. It's a change in business, a change in business practices, a change that this world will certainly be in tune with. There's yet hope. The new manager's coming. And with him comes that new management model. He's going to renovate the shop. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a lot of difficult moments. But once all the preparations are made, and certainly God's new business involves all of us, every one of us. But once we have that new manager in place, this new king, and we're all on board, and as long and we have been molded and changed so that we can fit in with our new manager, he will come to that throne of David and he will take it. And when he gets there, he'll hang out the sign, open, under new management. And what a business it will be.